Is there any difference for you in any small or big way this year without the number one pick? I mean, is there any difference in your approach? I know you still have to know every player, scout every player, but I mean, do you concentrate on different players at all? I mean, what's the difference?
Well, it's different because there's going to be I wouldn't say weaker, but a lesser grouping of top talent available at that spot, but you're still going to hope that one of those guys that you have in that upper group falls to you. Then you just, you work accordingly.
Will you be, are you actively seeking to move up into that first round? Is that something, is that a goal of yours this year?
You know, I'm keeping our options open. I feel like if the opportunity presents itself and there's a player that we absolutely feel we have to have, that we all collectively as a group really, really are pining for, then we're going to, we'll try and do that if it's possible. But, at the same time, I have five picks, so it's not like, I can offer up a whole lot to make any great moves, upwards.
A couple of years ago, you said that you'd rather start a rookie in the backfield than on the offensive line. Has that changed at all, that philosophy?
It all depends on your situation, obviously. If you have an ultra-talented corner, I think I probably even spoke on this a couple years ago, but if you have an ultra-talented corner that can match up physically, there's less to know out there on that island in a scheme we play. So, but there's a lot going on the offensive line, and there's a lot to know, and there's a lot of things to overcome and adapt to in a game environment just from a mental standpoint. So it's still, I think, a harder learning curve, definitely.
With what you've done in the offseason, and what you could still maybe do in the draft, do you feel better where you are at center or better where you are at safety with what you've got?
Well, both of them are still a work in progress. It's an evolving situation. We have talented players. We have three snappers currently on our roster. I don't know if you guys even realize, but Donald Thomas has played snaps, albeit in the preseason, but he's played snaps at center. And if you go through most rosters and depth charts, conventionally you usually will have generally your starting center, your more true center, so to speak, and then you'll have usually a guard that can snap or a guy that's a guard first that can also snap and play at a winning level as your second center. Like I said, we have three snappers right now. We'll keep our options open. And, like all position groups, guys, no matter who you are, where you came from, I think we've been pretty consistent in best players play. And whoever's going to start for this team in 2014 has got to produce and play at a winning level week in, week out, period.
You envision a competition between Phil Costa, I think, and Holmes. So with his decision, just how did that impact those plans, and do you need to address that position, whether in the draft or somewhere else?
Well, like I said, we'll keep our options open, always trying to improve. We took Khalid Holmes in the fourth round. We have plans for him. But, again, you have to compete and you have to win a job. You're not just going to settle into a job for being average, mediocre, or adequate. You have to play at a winning level and ascend to a championship level. And we have to do that collectively, I think, to win a championship. So, we'll continue to look at all positions. There's areas that, I know you all pinpoint and, we pinpoint in our personnel meetings where we feel like we can create either more competition or create more depth. But at the same time, you have to have those players available to do that. So, if there's somebody out there that has a chance to make us better, we'll explore that and we'll bring him in, we'll work him out, or we'll try to acquire him one way or another, or we'll try to look for him in the draft. But again, if there's nobody that's either sitting there or no one on the street or, and so forth, we're not going to just plug someone in that has name recognition or whatever. That's what we have a staff of scouts and good personnel men and football men and coaches around to make those decisions on who we feel we should give those chances to.
Ryan, how, if at all, so obviously signing Nick's, Reggie coming back, you have a bunch of wide receivers right now, but Reggie's at his age, this is a one-year deal. How does that signing affect, if at all, your thoughts on stockpiling more young wide receivers moving forward, maybe looking at that position in this draft?
Again, if there's someone that can make us better, we'll try to acquire them. We definitely feel obviously better about the wide receiver position now with the addition of Akeem, and you know, he's a competitive, you know, lights out type guy that can make big plays for us in the passing game. You know, with Reggie coming along like he is, and the younger guys, and the flashes they've shown in the past, you know, the bar is set higher at that position group. But again, you know, like I said, you know, no matter where you originate from, no matter who you are, the bar is set really high for who's going to start in this football team. And it, like any position, you look, you know, it's kind of like when we first got here, it's, you know, it's more of a, it's a unique deal because of Andrew and our early success. It's been more of like a win now slash reload on the fly. And that's just kind of how the approach has been. It's a little bit unique, but that's kind of how it's been. And so while you want to still restock your roster, you still want to be able to have guys that are ready to go out there and play that have been there, done that in a sense, so you can keep winning games because it's about winning football games. So, you know, we're going to try to get the best players, and if they have to sit for a year, that may be the case, but we're hopefully going to get guys that are going to challenge early.
Said this draft is one of the best they've ever seen in terms of the quality. Has that been your assessment? And then as part B to that, if that's so, how does that sort of benefit you guys being in the position you're in, not having that number one pick in terms of, you know, the type of player you might be able to get?
Well, I'll say this. There's definitely deep spots in the draft. There's definitely some spots where it's not as deep, but there's a good handful of really good players that are going to be available for the taking. But with a deep, with a very deep draft, with all the juniors, the exciting thing is after the draft, and we are going to really focus on that. And we've talked about it a lot with this extra time with the draft. You know, the hay's in the barn. We're not going to sit here and, you know, and create paralysis by analysis. We're going to we're looking at different avenues on how we can be productive on draft day, with just five picks. And I think after the draft, with the depth of this draft, I feel like that's an area to really target. So we're going to really streamline that process, go and try to get those guys that we really, you know, covet that are still sitting on that front board of ours and go after them guns blazing to hopefully create, you know, that top, you know, a 61, you know, man basically roster with the practice squad. You know, we look beyond the 53. You know, we look beyond that. And you know, we want to be able to acquire the best possible players. Even the back end of those guys that are even C-type free agents that maybe we get a position group that's loaded. You still want those guys to have a skill set, the competitive fiber, the football intelligence to have a chance, just a chance to start. You know that they're at least going to make some noise in camp, whether it be from a play speed standpoint, from a competitive standpoint, from a guy. There's all different types, you know, whether it be a guy that has an adequate skill set across the board, but has off the charts football acumen and recall of the scheme, and just those type of guys can make a splash in camp as well, just for doing things the right way, being where they're supposed to be, and being in the right spot to have a chance to make the play. Because some guys are ultra talented, but they're never in the right spot. So,
Ryan, you got the draft, and then you got the free agents you just talked about. How critical is it to supplement even those by kicking the bushes and finding a Josh McNary or a Jarrell Freeman?
It's what drives us. It's what's exciting. You know, I really you know, hope I never lose any of that, you know, zeal for finding those diamonds, because that's what drove me on the road as a scout. And that's what all those guys on my staff remind me of when they get excited and bring me a player. And it's getting pretty late now, you know, the like I said, we're still kind of just picking up some twigs and straw outside the barn. All the hay's already in there, but those are going to be those last bits of straw that we throw in there are going to be for guys after the draft. But every once in a while, you'll get a guy from, I mean, a school that I guarantee 95% of people in Indianapolis never heard of, that you know, blew out a pro day when he was at a D1 school, and our scouts do their due diligence, pull him aside, set up a private workout with them on the sly, try to make the kid take an oath to never say a word, that, you know, all those types of things that, you know, you do when you're an area scout. But at the end of the day, it builds excitement, and you get that guy in here maybe even as a mini camp waiver guy, an injury waiver guy that is basically a three-day tryout guy in mini camp, because you have to fill bodies to be able to practice. you know, after the draft. So those guys are neat when you bring them in because they're kind of that unknown commodity that really flash, but the tape is hard to watch because it's so poor, and they're playing against, you know, maybe a pass rusher playing against a 5'11", 220-pound left tackle. So that's a hard, you know, a deal to assess. So you get them in this environment, and you can usually tell right away if they belong or not. So, but that's something we really it's a fun part of it, and it's it helps our scouts, I think, continue in this long lull we have to dig. But again, it's not for our front board; it's for our backboard.
Right, can you? How did you get Josh? A lot of teams were interested.
Well, the credit goes to our pro department, our pro scouts who attend the regional combines. And we've been active participants in that. We signed two fullbacks the other day that were at the Super Regional. I went in to see Josh in, I want to say, August of maybe 2010 or 9. It was like my first school visit of the year. And he had, I believe, like 13 and a half sacks, or maybe it was the second most sacks in the country as a junior. And he was playing that flex double eagle defense that coach had out of Cal Poly with Chris Gokong and all these guys that made tons of plays, and he was playing that outside defensive end hybrid position, and he made tons of plays, and he went and we had him like, you know, late fifth round when I was with Philly, but he had a service commitment, so you just completely forgot about him, and he got brought to my attention by John Shaw, because you're always looking for fullback, possible former inside linebackers that can play fullback because there's such a shortage of them these days. So he brought Josh to my attention. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, I'd forgotten all about him. And he looked great. He was like 251 pounds. He ran sub 4.7, and he really did a nice job catching the ball out of the backfield. And that's when we were, you know, kind of looking for fullbacks early last offseason. But he came here, and within a week, and it took a while for the paperwork to get through. But once he got here, you know, Josh, within a week of a guy that, first of all, had never even played inside linebacker before, was going to be our starting nickel until he hurt his hamstring. So it was bad, but it was good in a way because we were able to stash him on our practice roster, and no one had a lick of tape from the preseason on him because he would have been claimed in a hurry if we would have tried to expose him at the cutdown, because he's smart, plays fast, he's a big, great-looking kid, and again, it's like you had alluded to before, is looking in every corner, trying to find talent, and that's what we do, and that's what our pro guys did at the regional combine.
With only five picks, is there for you any particular appeal to try and collect some more?
You'd love to. You'd love to. But you also have to have willing partners. Sure. So our phone lines will be open. Hopefully they're ringing, because, you know, if there's a player there and the whole room's kind of ho-hum and you're like, oh, it fills a need, you know, that's just not the type of kind of environment we want to create. We want excitement when that name, when we're turning that card in. We want guys high-five and not doing limp handshakes, you know. We want guys that if there's guys that fall to us that we're, you know, kind of luke on, and you would love to trade back and acquire some more picks, because I feel like then we can get those guys later that fall to us in those other rounds.
Brian, could you elaborate? You said something a minute ago about with Andrew it's a little different. You build, you know, build now or win now and reload on the fly, and that seems maybe a non-traditional paradigm as opposed to draft young quarterback, stockpile draft picks, build for the future. How do you balance those two philosophically as you go into drafts and personnel decisions right now?
Well, it's uncharted waters, like a lot of these last 2 years have been in this building. So we just kind of adapt. It's an adapt or die mindset, and I feel like every situation is different in the league. Every roster is different. Every player at each position, especially quarterback, is different, and they bring something different, a little bit different to the table. But when you have a quarterback that can't, and that's why we took him one overall, because, you know, across the board, you check every box, and it's pretty much outstanding. It's not very good or adequate or good, and those are kind of what we go by. They're all outstanding, and the football intelligence, the testicle fortitude, those comeback games, which he's done since high school. He's done everything, been more of a leader with each passing day. So when you have someone that can kind of put the team on his shoulders and do that, you got to do your best to protect him and get the players around him to help him win and win and continue to win and build sustained success. But it wasn't a situation where, you know, we came out. If we would have come out and been 0-6 or something like that and really struggled, then, you know, then it'd be a different mindset. But when you beat the Packers, you know, with no head coach and you know, and guys rose to the occasion. It's just a credit to the unbelievable job and message that Chuck and the NBA and everybody, you know, conveyed, and it stuck. But it would have been, I think, kind of foolish to sit there and try to think, well, we can't win now. Let's just pack it in this year. I mean, there's the really kind of the overall character in this building and the way all these coaches are wired, you know, that's kind of never been the feeling or the players. I think Mathis and you know, Reggie would have pitched a big fit if we would have been talking like we weren't going to go and try and win a Super Bowl that, you know, in 2012. And that was the mindset, regardless of what everyone thought.
If you look at the defensive line, the way you've built it, almost every year you've gone out and gotten somebody, whether it's Corey Redding and then Ricky John last year, and you went and got Arthur this year, and McKinney and Brayo Franklin. Do you like the makeup of that offensive or defensive line?
Really do. Really do. We finally have the body types, the guys that know how to play square, the guys that have, you know, they've been in the scheme before, whether it maybe it wasn't here, but it was in Baltimore or in San Francisco. They have a familiarity with the scheme, you know. Before, you know, it was kind of like trying to, you know, teach an old dog new tricks. You know, if you've been screaming off the ball, getting up the field every snap, and that muscle memory, that's a hard habit to break. And so we have guys now that are much better fits that know what we're trying to accomplish and then have a real respect for stopping the run and have a mindset of we're going to stop the run. And that's, you know, with the addition of DeQuell and then plus, you know, not only what he brings to the table physically and production-wise and, you know, all the tackles he brings to the table, you know, the leadership and just being that conduit and to the rest of that defense of knowing how vital stopping the run is, you know, not only from the beginning of the year, but especially deep into the playoffs.
When you go into a draft like now, and I'm, you know, it seems strange because it was just 2012 when you had all those guys that were contributing. Do you have to start planning already out for, you know, whatever, if you're going to re-sign these guys, if you need to start drafting guys to replace guys and that sort of thing?
Always. I feel like if you're not constantly thinking about the future and what ifs and doomsday scenarios and, you know, what if this guy, you know, we feel like we have a great place and a great thing going on here, but sometimes, you know, it's like we've done before. You go aggressively to get a guy, there's a certain point where you cry uncle and that guy, you can't do anymore, and that guy walks out your building. So then you're left with a significant hole somewhere. So you always have to be planning and restocking the shelves, and that's where developing your players, you know, is so critical to the overall big picture. You know, the development of your young talent so that, you know, a lot of the great organizations that have been consistent and have been consistent winners over the years, you know, a lot of their top guys, when they walk, there's someone right there to plug right in that's been sitting for 2 years that has played some spot duty, but now they're ready to roll. And, you know, it's nice to have depth like that. So our roster is obviously a heck of a lot different than it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago sitting here. But it's continually a work in progress, and you just don't want to ever – you only want to rob Peter to pay Paul so much. You know, you can't do it from top to bottom. You do it, and we do it, you know, and if the allure is really strong and where it could maybe help us get over that hump in the year you're in. But looking long-term and big picture-wise, you want to be prudent and always be looking to the future with how you're making your decisions.
Not to disparage Antoine in any way, but given the type of player LaRon is at safety, you look for a different type of profile of a player type to play with LaRon so that there's a better complement there?
We're always looking for the best combos. You know, Antoine had a great skill set to go with LaRon. You know, there's some good safeties in this draft. There's, you know, plenty of athletic safeties out there that can run. It's hard because our safeties are interchangeable, so to speak, and that's how Chuck likes them, so that they're, you know, you don't have necessarily a true free or a true strong. They should be able to be interchangeable. But at the same time, we need safeties that can cover. We need safeties that can run, because it's a balance. You know, there's, to give you guys some more insight, usually those safeties that can truly cover, they have a corner background, but you ask them to support in the run, and there's only a select few that are good tacklers. And then you got the true box guys that come downhill like linebackers, but you put them in space, you know, versus a tight end or a back or somebody, you know, or a receiver, they're going to get, you're going to get torched. So it's, you want to be able to, it's never a perfect world, but if you can find those safeties that can both cover and support the run, then you're doing pretty well.
You guys have talked, since you guys got Arthur Jones, you've talked about his versatility, can play all the spots, but do you envision him as is he more, he's not a nose tackle, is he more tackle?
He's play, I mean, he's, when he came out, you know, Arthur was in the 308 range coming out. You know, he came here on his visit, he was 330. I don't know how much he's weighed here in phase one, but he's a big guy, and he's clearly stout enough to do that. That's what makes him unique, is he knows how to play all three spots. That's what, you know, camp, it'll shake out, preseason will shake out, and that, I think those things will take care of themselves.
But you didn't bring him in here to, you brought him in here to be a starter and be an impact player somewhere.
Exactly.
Two extra weeks, has it been tough to not overanalyze this draft?
You know, even when they first announced it, I thought right off the bat, okay, this is going to be interesting, because you don't want to start all these brush fires start happening where you start getting, especially with the internet, is such a, it causes all kinds of havoc, because you get all these brush fires where this guy just showed up at a private workout and his agent's putting out there that he ran 4.29 when he, you know, in all these types of things, and the area scouts looking at them and sending you emails and texts and things like that, and that's all fine and good. But I think these 2 weeks here, while they're, it's borderline torture. We're really staying disciplined and focused on our backboard and making sure that we're starting the recruiting process for guys that are potential free agents for us. And sometimes they get their feelings hurt because they think, well, what are you talking about? I'm a draft pick. Well, in case you're not, we'd like to have you, you know, and who's to say we're not still going to pick you, but just in case, you know, we open those dialogues. We have coaches work guys out. And at the end of the day, just like anything, it's about relationships. It might be the difference, you know, between you and another team, that you actually showed him some interest and made the trip to whatever university in some corner of the country that's not easy to get to. It took three connections, and you spent the day with them and maybe treated them to, you know, a hamburger. So it's that ends up going a long way. I see it all the time.
Ryan, how difficult is it to try and evaluate a guy from like a Bloomberg, Concordia, Minnesota, someplace like that, versus a guy that maybe played in the SEC and you know what he's up against?
I was actually in Concordia this year, and I wasn't the only GM, which has really blew my mind when I saw a stack of business cards and saw another GM in there. I thought, wow. But anyway, I always taught, my old boss, Charlie Army, I remember him saying years and years ago was, you know, scout the player, not the school. And I've really stuck, really adhered to that in a big way, I feel like, throughout my career, to where I want to infuse that in our building, that, you know, you can't discriminate where a guy originates from. You know, if they have talent, it should be able to be evident on the film. Now, sometimes the film quality makes it tough to get a true feel. So that's where the grill grinders on your staff find players. Because the lazy guys, they're not sitting there, you know, at a D3 school or another school that maybe has poor facilities, or you're sitting there with a VHS tape and, you know, an actual remote control that you hit rewind. I've been there before, and then it rewinds all the beginning of the tape, and you got to find where you were at before. But it becomes a challenge. But the guys that work for me and work for the Indianapolis Colts have that type of drive, to where they'll sit there painstakingly through four or five tapes and get that best. You know, Greg Toler is a perfect example. I remember watching his film from St. Paul, you know, NAIA school in Virginia. And, I mean, you know, that was some of that tape, you know, was it's only sideline view. And if he's on the other side, you're trying your best to zone in on him and look, but it's fuzzy, and then you can't quite tell. And then you say, okay, there's a dreadlock, so I can see that's him, you know. But you have to look. You have to actually look for how their socks look, how their, you know, maybe their shoes are a little to be able to find guys like that. There's tricks, you know, to be able to locate those guys. And if they're a safety and they're moving around, then you're in real trouble. I mean, that's one of the ones that could make you pull your hair out. But to really find those diamonds, I mean, you have to have guys that are willing to do the extras. And it's not – with the All-Star games, though, that's one way to be able to get a really good look, have quality film, and be able to scrutinize them that much more. But, again, then there's a flip side of that because I think that, you know, bowl game flashes will get you burned too. So,
when you talk about how these last 2 weeks have been borderline torture, and maybe even the last week, how much of what's out there is just pure BS, and how much of it's – Do you believe, or I mean,
you got to consider your source. You know, if you know you have good friends in this.
That's all they say is a source, though.
Yeah, true. You know, you guys know that. The thing about it is at the end of the day, you look at the film, and if they're saying that some guy that didn't run at the combine or run at his pro day just had finally worked out for an NFL team and he ran 4.38, but I had four guys or five looks all think that the guy had average play speed, then he stays that way, you know, because so many instances of where, you know, it's like this, you know, it's kind of like, you know, those measurables, you know, a lot of times the combine, it lies, but the tape doesn't. And that's kind of our, one of our, you know, battle cries around here is, and I'm at fault sometimes as well. And that's why I have guys like, you know, Jimmy Ray and TJ McCray, Todd Vasvary, and all of those guys, you know, I tell them, you know, remind me, keep me grounded, because sometimes I'm in a cocoon in a different world, hearing all these different types of things, talking to different types of people outside their realm. And their realm is what I came from. And I need to make sure that I'm still dialed into that realm. And they do a good job with that, because at the end of the day, it's about the film. And if guys can play the game. Because if you get a bunch of athletes that don't know how to play the game, you're going to get your rear end fired.
Do you see value in putting misinformation out there?
I never.
We're interested here. We're not interested here.
I just don't have time to scheme for that. I really don't have time to scheme for that. I figure, I've always kind of felt like if you spend all your time doing that, you're going to take your eye off the ball. I don't see the point. It's such an inexact day anyway. I mean, what you tell them you're not going to do, you may end up doing, you know, because no one knows who's going to fall to us at that pick in the second round. No one has any idea. So, you know, it's so inexact. It's hard to put out any smoke screens because, like I said, your smoke screen might end up becoming a reality.
You were in the year to have the number one pick when you got Andrew. And as you sort of look at this draft and the dynamic that all of these quarterbacks that are swirling around up there, what impact do you think the potential run or the variance in how people view quarterbacks ahead of you will impact who sits there? It seems as though there could be a run on guys that maybe don't belong there on the board, but are going to push people down to you in two.
I hope they take a ton of them. I hope they take 30 of them. That'd be great. I hope the guys we have in, you know, at the bottom of our board are going in one and two quarterback. I hope. Let's hope that happens, guys.
That does happen, though, right?
It sure does. You know, it sure does. And I mean, I'll tell you right now, I mean, I've been in draft rooms and it never changes any year I'm in one. You take a position that's perceived as need, and you take a guy that is unequivocally before the combine, you know, a fifth round guy, and you just keep connecting the dots and saying, okay, well, now, and then in 3 weeks, then you see him up, he's up in the top of four. Then before you know it, he's in the bottom of one. And you say, how in the heck did he end up there? That's why we try like heck to be disciplined with any – and we have, you know, I have a director, college scout, and I keep track of any moves on our board because we like to keep it as pure as possible and not get into a habit of moving guys all over the place. It's just you end up not knowing which way is up.
Are you still confident in Trent Richardson's progress? I mean, obviously, he's kind of the number one pick this year. Are you confident in his process and how he fits in with Ahmad and Malika?
I'll say this, guys. Let's just let the guy get in pads. All right. I mean, this horse has been dead and buried, you know, for months. Trent's in a great place right now. He's working his tail off. That position group is as strong as any position group on this football team. He's got his work cut out for him. He knows it. And we like any position group, we expect big things out of him and everyone else at every position if we're going to win a Super Bowl. Everyone's got to play lights out.